Welcome to Mormon Happy Hour. My name is Colleen Dietz. Join me and my guests each week for an entertaining recap of the hottest topics in Mormonism. We keep tabs on social media and headline news so you don't have to. Don't miss our live pro tips as you adjust to your new and exciting post-Mormon life. Mormon Happy Hour is here to bring you the irreverent side of Mormonism, wherever you may be. Welcome to episode 56. Thank you for those who have responded in wild support of my determination last episode to make Mormon Happy Hour sustainable. I would love to continue to be creative and follow my passion instead of giving up Mormon Happy Hour entirely and taking up a second job. I'm so grateful for those who value the episodes that I create enough to kick in the cash to support its creation. Also, those of you who are rating Mormon Happy Hour on iTunes, I see you. Thank you so much for taking the time to do that. I read every review and it keeps me going. I leaked an episode planning video with Marie Kent on Patreon last week, and it contains some top secret gossip not quite fit for regular airwaves. Remember, those of you who were able to witness it, you are under covenant not to reveal what you heard. So if you're sad you missed the gossip, this is me keeping at my end of the deal that I made last episode to make a monthly show of support worth your cash. Remember, Patreon support also means Mormon Happy Hour swag, full video guest interviews on Patreon, and the continued guarantee of a future rich with new Mormon Happy Hour episodes. I want to give a shout out to our new Patreon subscribers in January. We have Scott, who joined the Celestial Cocktail Bar at $20 a month. Paul increased his support to $30 a month. Thank you, Paul. Lori also joined the Celestial Cocktail Bar at $20 a month. And we also had Mars Girl and Joel join at the $5 tier, which is the whole keg. Anna Lee also kicked in a generous $30 on Venmo, which is a great option if you'd prefer a one-time donation. Gracious thanks, Anna Lee. And I will have links to all of those places in the show notes if you'd like to just follow the link, and it'll be real super easy. I got a great suggestion from a listener to look into sponsorship, which I've been kicking around since I started, but I haven't yet found the perfect way to implement it. But here's what I'm thinking. Since so many listeners are in Utah or make regular pilgrimages there like I do, my dream is to create partnerships with local artisans and shops that specialized in apostate crafts. I'm thinking local coffee shops, breweries, distilleries, wineries, tattoo parlors, those type of heathen goods and services. So hit me up with your favorites and let's see if we can set up a partner sponsorship. If a business you suggest turns into a sponsor, expect a major swag thank you from me. If I'm going to take up your minutes with a sponsor, I want it to be something actually useful for you, like a great place to get a cup of coffee or a sweet brewery tour. Nominations for this year's Brody Award has closed and voting will be open soon. Check in with MainStreetPlaza.com for voting. Not only was Mormon Happy Hour nominated for Best Podcast, but episodes were nominated in five other categories, including activism, LDS culture, theological discussion, polygamy, abuse, gender, and orientation. The Brodies is an excellent roundup of the absolute best of the best content in the ex-Mormon world. You will be glad that you checked it out. I will post a link in the show notes, and don't forget to vote for Mormon Happy Hour. Thank you. So today, three Mormons, Bryce Blankenagel, Leslie Butterfield, and myself, will be discussing reasons why we have not yet resigned from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, or the Winds for Satan Church, as they are more commonly referred to, after President Nelson's strong admonishment not to use the term Mormon. Hence, we provide Winds for Satan. Before we get started, I did want to refer you back to the very last episode, number 56, Mormon Headlines with Marie Kent, to hear all the crazy changes occurring with attorney Mark Nagel and QuitMormon.com. We three are very pro-resigning, if that is what you feel will bring you the peace on your journey. No, we are not those three Mormons. They surrendered that title in November because Winds for Satan and all. So we decided to pick it up and use it for good. So enjoy our version of Three Mormons. Welcome to Mormon Happy Hour. I am joined by two of my very favorite podcasting cohort friends today. I have Bryce Blankenagel, which this is pretty much his inaugural, if we don't count Sunstone, which doesn't really count as an episode, this is his inaugural virgin visit on Mormon Happy Hour.
Oh, yes. Please pop my cherry. I love it. Yes. I'm so glad to be here. Thank you. Thanks for actually having me on your show.
You're welcome. And then we also have Leslie, which you guys all know Leslie by now. But just Bryce, do you want to, like, for anybody who doesn't know who you are, do you want to quickly introduce yourself and then we'll have Leslie go too?
Yeah, so I do a Mormon podcast. I do a Naked Mormonism and a Glassbox podcast and my Book of Mormon podcast. So any listeners who have heard readings through of a certain book by a certain prophet with Marie Kent on this show, she's my co-host on my Book of Mormon. We have a good time over there. But I focus on Mormon history. That's my main show, Naked Mormonism. And I just try to do a serialized chronological history of the Mormon Church from the birth of Joseph Smith on, and I've been doing that since late 2014 now.
That's and awesome.
I you can't help but also follow current events within Mormonism when you focus on the history as well, so that's kind of what has spawned the Glassbox podcast as well.
Got it. Do you ever find, so you're going chronological from birth to moving on?
Yeah.
Do you ever find that, like, you miss something and you're like, oh shit, I gotta go back? Like, what do?
Oh, I see. Well, we were talking about this before we actually hit the record button, but, like, everybody's first podcast episodes just suck, right? And when it comes to, like, telling history, you have to decide somewhere to drop a pin because history doesn't happen in snippets. History is a continuum. Mm-hmm. So I decided to drop the pin at the birth of Joseph Smith and started there. And if I were to start it again, I would start way before then. I would talk about, I'd probably start at the Salem witch trials or something like that.
Wow.
So all the time I have to go back and say, well, this is important because back when this was happening in episode 9 of the podcast, another thing that I didn't talk about at the time was going on, and that's why this is relevant here. So it happens all the time and it's so frustrating, but it just makes it more fun, really.
Yeah. And I mean, we're always learning new things about history. So you always have to go back and be like, oh yeah. And by the way, this also happened too.
Yeah. Totally.
Well, thank you so much for being here.
Woo-hoo. Thank you.
And Leslie, you're up.
Yes. So I think everyone is probably familiar. I've been on your show like 7 times, and I love it. We always have a good time. I'm Leslie, and okay, what about me? I do a podcast for Rational Faiths on occasion. It's not as regular as the weekly ones, but you know, when something comes up, we like to talk about it. And it's basically exploring the dynamics of that women face in the church and the different intersections. So women of color, people of color, men even, and different cultures and how everything kind of intersects and examining that. So yeah, that's what I do. And I write for Rational Faith. I blog occasionally and I write for a few other places. And oh, my website that I've totally been neglecting lately, but that's still up and it's still great. Unrighteous Dominion, where we've collected stories of spiritual abuse all along the spectrum that people have faced within the church, just to raise awareness on what it is and how harmful and hurtful it can be.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of, this is just a tangential, by the way, I watched the Netflix series, The Keepers, over the weekend. Have you watched that?
Good. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
God.
Yeah. It is. Yeah, it's disturbing. I actually watched that even before I, like, officially started my official faith journey.
Yeah.
But I saw so many parallels between Mormonism and what was going on in the Catholic Church at that time. So
it's really hard.
And it's given me a good lens. Yeah, it is. It is. It's given me a good lens though for viewing the stories that I hear and talking to the people that I talk to who have experienced abuse where the church is, you know, implicated or liable even. it's really powerful to view it in a different way rather than from kind of a more believing perspective where, you know, people need to forgive and forget and move on. And it's so much deeper than all of that. So,
yeah, for sure. And, oh, and didn't you have an op-ed that was just recently published, Leslie? What was that about?
Yeah, that was a response to the temple changes.
Oh, cool.
And it was published in the Tribune this last Sunday. And it was basically kind of a Mormon feminist commentary, which it was interesting. It was interesting to see some of the feedback and interesting for people to tell me that Mormon feminists can't exist in the church because lo and behold, here I am. So, but yeah, I'm grateful. I'm grateful that the Tribune published that and raise awareness, you know, for the feelings of the temple changes all along the spectrum, because it's easy to feel one way or the other. But like for me, I felt a myriad of feelings about those changes, which we talked about.
Yeah. On two episodes ago now. Yeah.
Yes.
No, I forget.
Yep. The one with Chloe. Yeah. Yes.
Before we get into the topic, I did have a life pro tip. I had a drink I wanted to share. But before I do that, I wanted to ask my guests, Bryce, are you drinking anything today?
I am. This is an early morning record, so hopefully that doesn't throw a wrench into what you're about to show everybody, but I am drinking my morning brew coffee, and it is a French vanilla Kona brand coffee with a little bit of vanilla creamer in it and a little splash of milk, and it is simply delicious.
Nice. Kona's my favorite blend. I love that.
I need to try that.
I love Kona. And then how do you brew your coffee? Like, do you use a Keurig or what do you do?
I bought, let's see, when I decided I'm going to drink coffee, when I finally decided that was going to be my morning drink of choice instead of Monster, I went to Walmart and bought a $25 Black & Decker drip coffee system. And it's the same one that I've been using all along, and it works great, and I'm happy with it. And I don't care what everybody says about their French press and their espresso machines and their Keurigs. I don't care what all you say. This is good enough for me. It's nice and cheap too.
Well, I will judge you because you live in what, Seattle?
Right.
The birthplace of coffee in our nation. So get your shit together, babe.
It's cool because where I live, I live pretty close to downtown. I can walk or bike 10 minutes to a different coffee shop every day of the week and not hit the same coffee shop in like a month. They're everywhere. These like little, like, you know, artisan coffee shops, and they make the most amazing coffee. But it's really expensive to do that, so I haven't made a habit out of it yet.
That sounds like a glorious life goal right there. Oh man.
Yeah.
So I, as a hangover from Mormonism, so I had a KitchenAid, and I also had a wheat grinder because I would buy wheat berries, you know, food storage and all that shit. But I never used the wheat.
I never did that.
I did. I never used the wheat grinder, but when we started drinking coffee, we do prefer French press because we're stuck up bitches. Thank you. We like it. Uh-huh. And so you have to grind your own. We buy it in whole bean and then you have to grind it. So I started using my wheat grinder on my KitchenAid to grind my coffee. Take
that's
that more.
So ingenuous.
I'm sure there's a lot of coffee snobs out there that are being like, you did what? So,
how dare you? Whatever. Don't tell me how to drink my coffee.
Right.
I'm happy.
Leslie, are you drinking anything this morning?
I am drinking Diet Mountain Dew. I do drink coffee, though, and I'm like Bryce. I had someone from one of the Facebook groups, when I started deciding that I wanted to drink coffee, I was like, what do I do? What do I get? And I had someone send me a coffee machine, like just the regular drip.
The drip.
Ones. And it was like so nice. Thank you, Michael, if you're listening. That was like totally nice of you. So yeah, and I had some Exmo friends that actually found the manual for me online, because it was used, of course. And so I'm like using this old used coffee maker that someone sent me with this like printed off manual. And it's wonderful. I love it. I just don't know how to use the timer. See, if I use the morning timer, I think that I could get my, you know, act together enough to like have coffee in my, in the morning, but instead I don't use it and I just like get a soda in the fridge. So, but yeah, coffee. I mean, when I first started drinking it, you know how you just don't know what you're doing and you just put a bunch of crap in, I mean like sugar and cream, whatever. Yeah. So that's what I did. And I gained like 10 pounds. And so I'm like, okay, I need to like figure out something else. So I am actually drinking coffee black, mm-hmm. which has amazing health benefits, and I really like it. I just don't know what kind of coffee to get. I go in the supermarket, and it's so totally overwhelming. Like, mm-hmm. I think last time I bought the Dunkin' Donuts coffee, which is mm-hmm. actually really good, but I don't know the difference. I mean, I'm still very much a novice. So,
oh, yeah.
So I've recently started drinking it black, and for basically the same reasons, I also went dairy-free. So finding dairy-free creamers that aren't full of chemical like shit possible. Is really hard.
Yes.
So I'm like, fine, I'll just drink it black, whatever, what the fuck. So, but it's taken a long time. It's taken a couple years to get to, I'm okay drinking it black. So.
Yeah, I don't mind it now. I mean, it's really good.
Yeah.
I like it.
But you have to get there. You can't just jump in there.
No.
My first coffee when I was in high school, and they finally put a Starbucks in Bountiful, that was the town I grew up in. That was such an exciting moment for me to go to Starbucks, because I didn't really like believe in the church as much. I was apathetic. I really didn't care about it. So I went to Starbucks, and I just seeing the menu, I'm like, I don't fucking know what I'm doing here. I'll take a coffee. And they're like, black? I'm like, yeah. Like, tall, grande, or venti? I'm like, I don't know. What are you saying even? I don't know these words. So that my first sip of coffee was black coffee. And I got it, and I said, thank you. And I walked on out, and I took two sips of it, and I threw it in the garbage on my way out. Black coffee is not great for starters.
So for Leslie, you were talking about drinking coffee black. And when I started drinking coffee black, I think the best move I made was I went with medium roast. So you know how they have like light roast, medium roast, and then dark roast.
Yeah. What the hell does that mean?
That's just how long the bean was roasted. So the light roast is not going to have a very, it's going to be a really light flavor. Medium is a little bit darker. And then dark roast is going to have a lot of the burnt, really rich
coffee
more coffee bitter taste. So like your espressos are always dark roast. So if you're going to be drinking it black, I would suggest like a light or a medium. I like going medium, because to me, light's like brown water. I'm like, meh. Right. I like to have some coffee flavor. So I go for medium. Also, breakfast blends. So if you go to like get a Dunkin' Donuts brand, I noticed that they have a lot of breakfast blends, or Dunkin' Donut house blends. Breakfast blends are darker and more bitter, I found. So I don't really care for breakfast blends black. They're good for mixing stuff and making drinks out of, but I don't like them black. So I would recommend like a Kona medium roast would probably be a good bet. And you can find those in all kinds of brands, a Kona medium roast, and try that for black and see what you think.
Okay. I'm going to do it.
All right. And then for the life pro tip that I actually prepared, I taught everyone the green tea mixed shot in our last episode. And so I wanted to follow up. It's equal parts of, I have all the bottles. So I have equal shots of peach schnapps. So this, there we go. There's the word peach. Peach schnapps, which schnapps is just their liqueurs. So there are lots of sugar and lots of flavor, not a whole lot of alcohol. I think this is probably like 15%. So it's not very high. And then it's the other part is there were different recipes say sweet and sour or whiskey sour. I couldn't find whiskey sour, so I'll have to hit like Total Wine or BevMo and see if I can find whiskey sour, but this is just sweet and sour. These don't have any liquor in them. They're just mixers. You can find them in the liquor aisle by like your Bloody Mary mixes and margarita mixes and stuff like that. Same thing. And then the last ingredient, the other equal part is Jameson whiskey. So you do equal parts of all three, and then you can put a splash of Sprite in the shot glass. And then it's a mixed shot. It's called the green tea shot. It's really, really good. But I got all the ingredients, and I'm really just not a shot girl unless it's like a party. And so I really wanted to try it. And so I just made a drink out of it. And so I got a large cup, like a large tumbler, lots of ice. And then I put in two shots of everything. Well, kind of. So I put in two shots of peach. I put in two shots of sweet and sour, and then I put in three shots of Jameson just because, you know, if you're making a drink out of it, you got to have a little bit more liquor. And then because it was like, all that was like way too strong to sip on, like brr. So I put in, you don't sip on a mixed shot drink. That's gross. So I put in, I had a can of lemon lime seltzer. And so I put in because it calls for Sprite as part of the recipe, but I didn't want to add any more sugar, so I just got that can of lemon lime seltzer, which is like, I mean, if you've been listening to the show, you know that's like my favorite thing to do with mixed drinks is use a seltzer and put in all kinds of liquor and make it taste good. So then I just topped it all off with about a half a can of the lemon lime seltzer. That was the tits. It was delicious. It was so good. So I highly recommend using the green tea shot recipe and then just adding some lemon lime seltzer on ice, and you got yourself a drink.
Look at you, Miss Mixologist. That's
awesome. I just try shit, and when it works, I get really happy. That's pretty much how it goes.
Yeah, it's like me and coffee, you know? Exactly.
Okay, so now for the topic at hand, finally. So we, all three of us, are here today because we all three have something in common that we finally decided to get together and talk about. And we've been debating on whether we're just going to have an all-out bitch fest or if we're going to have like a reserved and, you know, thoughtful discussion. So it's probably going to be a mix of that.
All of it. Yes, please. I love it.
So the topic at hand today is resignation and whether your name remains on the church when you decide to leave the church or if you take the steps to resign. And if you haven't guessed already, the thing all three of us have in common is we technically are still members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, aka the Mormons. Wins for Satan. So, I know it's hard to believe that we're all actually members of the church, but we're all going to talk about why, because we all have very unique reasons. All three of us have different reasons, and we're not here to in any way cast shade on those who have resigned. Those who have resigned, and Mark Nagel and QuitMormon.com, all of that, like, hell fucking yeah. Like, you do you. I'm so glad that QuitMormon.com exists because it has, I mean, Mark Nagel is the attorney that runs the site, and he single-handedly, I think, has done so much pro bono work in the ex-Mormon community to relieve people of the burden of Mormonism when they need to, when that's what they need to do for their life. And so I really, really am grateful for what he does. And so we're going to get into why, but we're not here to cast shame on those who have resigned. We're just speaking our own piece, I guess you could say. Because exactly. people ask all the time why we have our name on the records, and so that's what we're here to to tell you. So
since, well, with me it's more like they shame me for still having my name on the record. I do some more inflammatory, you know, things on both sides of the fence, so that's what I get the most.
So since Bryce is our virgin on the show this week, he's going to go first, and he's going to tell us why he is still a member of record and the wise and all of his piece. So Take it away, Bryce.
This feels kind of out of turn. Virgins shouldn't go first. I feel like virgins should be instructed in what they're supposed to do and then allow them to experiment a little bit. But No,
you're our sacrificial virgin, Bryce. You go first. See how it goes.
I'm into it. Okay. So I don't know. There are a few reasons why I think people will choose to leave their name on the record. And I've had the opportunity every single day, every single moment of every single day to resign my membership from the church. And it's not that I have not taken the opportunity. It's that I have actively chosen to leave my name on the record books. Mm-hmm. And I've chosen to do that because for me, that's what I want to do. And that's what I feel is best for me to do. And the primary reason why is I feel that I'm able to get through communication barriers easier when I'm able to say that I am officially a member of the church. So where I found this, the best example of this was last year when I drove across the country. Two years ago almost, I drove across the country and hit all of the Mormon history sites along the way. And they're staffed almost exclusively with Mormon missionaries. And when I would introduce myself, hi, I'm Bryce Blankenagel. The first question the missionaries would always ask, oh, where are you from? And I would say, I'm from Utah. And they would say, oh, wow, are you a member? That was always the next question. And when I could say yes, a barrier came down. I could feel a metaphorical barrier just shatter where there was going to be one had I said I was not a member of the church. And when I was able to get through that barrier to begin with, I felt like I could have much more real conversations with these people that otherwise, if they knew that I wasn't a member for whatever reason, we may not have as rich and interesting and honest of conversations, right? So when you talk to a missionary or talk to somebody who is Mormon and they find out that you're from Utah and they find out for whatever reason that you're not a member, they're instantly suspicious. They want to know why. Is it that you were a member and you're no longer a member? Were you excommunicated? Did you resign from the church? Or are you one of those Utah holdouts who never joined the church? And is there a reason for that, right? So there's instantly they're calculating how their conversation should go when that is possibly not the conversation that I want to have. Mm-hmm. So I just find it so much easier to communicate with believers when they feel like I am a member of their group. And I am. That's the thing is I'm culturally Mormon. I don't believe in the church. I don't believe in God, but I'm still a member of the culture. All of my friends and all of my family are members of the church, right? Mm-hmm. So I feel like if I'm resigning from that, then somehow I'm also resigning a part of my past life that I don't want to let go of.
Yeah. I feel a lot of those same ways. Is that it? Is that the end of it for you? Or do you have any other?
I guess there are a few other reasons, but I think I'll yield my time of our very calm and calculated discussion and save that for the bitch fest part of it.
Okay. And Leslie, do you want to go next and tell us why you are still a member of Record?
Yeah. So, okay, where do I start? Very much like Bryce, I feel like I have a lot to say, and part of me saying that and part of having it heard and people listening is to get my foot in the door. And I am very much still a member on the books. Obviously, I haven't withdrawn my name. I haven't felt pressed to do that either. It's been very interesting to see, especially with Sam's excommunication, a lot of people that I knew, submitted their resignations. And some of them had difficult feelings after they did that. And it was very, they seemed to have gone through a different set of feelings, or feeling remorse or feeling guilt or feeling unsure, that kind of thing. And I think that those are all normal feelings for when you, I would think, withdraw your name and repackage kind of your identity in a way that you need to when you do that. Mm-hmm. I'm just not ready to do that. Like I already deal with a myriad of feelings in the space that I'm in that mm-hmm. I don't need to, for me right now, it's just not a priority to do that. I feel also very much called to, as Gina Colvin calls it, this luminal space where I just can exist in this confusing, bewildering, but also very enlightening and awakened space that I'm in. I have personal reasons as well. I'm, you know, a divorced single mother. To have my wishes respected as their mother, I need to be a member. You know, I need to be able to send an email to the primary president and say, my children are not to meet with anyone behind closed doors ever alone. I need to be able to say, hey, please let me know when their primary program is. I would love to come and support them if it's on a day that they're going. You know, I need to be able to keep that channel open. And as horrible as I think it is, that shuts down if I withdraw my name. I really like how Sunstone puts it, you know, there's more than one way to Mormon. And that's completely true. I mean, I don't have to carry all of this literal set of beliefs in order to consider myself a Mormon. And I can honor, withdrawing my name would never, you know, take the Mormonism out of me anyway. So I'm kind of like, why do it? Yeah. You know, those are kind of all of my reasons in a nutshell.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
And thank you both of you for kind of giving me the nutshell of why you're still a member. And I feel like your both of your reasons are much more deep than mine's gonna be. Mine's gonna be a lot more like, I don't give a fuck. So here's my reason.
Which is totally fine.
That's totally right, exactly.
Yes.
Yep. You are entitled to not give as many fucks as you want.
Right? Because that's pretty much how it goes. So the reason why I am still a member on record is because, like, I went through that long faith transition. Like, I stopped going in 2012, and I didn't go through my faith crisis until, like, 2016. And I was not active during any of that time, 100% inactive, but I was still believing. And then once I started listening to, like, Year of Polygamy and going public with my BYU rape experience, that's when everything kind of like collapsed, and it was hard for me to kind of let go. So during that time, I didn't want to disappoint my parents, like all those reasons why I didn't want to resign. And then when I finally got to a place where like I was okay, like it just wasn't a burning desire. Like I kind of decided that if they bugged me, if my ward harassed me, then I would resign to hopefully escape the harassment. And that was pretty much it. I almost changed my mind though, because I went through the sealing cancellation process to cancel my sealing to my first husband, and it was hell. It took me 12 months, and I had to continually, you know, meet with my bishop and my stake president, who were always asking me my worthiness and to, you know, confess transgressions and all these terrible things. And I had to provide documentation of all of, you know, my husband's criminal activity and blah, 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 blah. And it was just like, it was horrible to relive like the trauma of my first marriage and everything that happened during that. And then also to relive this ecclesiastical authority in my life and submit to it again, because I wanted that cancellation. So I was submitting to play the game. It was awful. Mm-hmm. It was terrible. It had been 12 calendar months. I hadn't received my cancellation. I was furious at the level of anxiety and emotional trauma that I was experiencing, you know, through that ecclesiastical authority in my life, that I finally decided, no, I'm done. I'm done. I have to cut and run. Cut and run. And so I started filling out the paperwork on quitmormon.com. And that's when I found out a couple other little difficulties that have nothing to do with Mark Nagel and everything to do with the church. My child is, her dad is not a member, but I was an idiot when she was born, and I was still a believing member. And so I had her blessed and given a name and a blessing. My parents were in town. You know how that all goes. So she's technically on the records of the church. And so not only do I have to resign myself, but I have to get her off too. And that's when I found out that to get a minor off, you have to load their their parents' account. So I would have had to load my husband in addition to me and her, and then he would have had to sign. And it was just like all of this like legal loophole paperwork that I'm like, what with all this bullshit? And it was just like, and in a time where I was already like really traumatic with the ceiling cancellation, I was just like, it was too much. And I just like, bah! And I gave up because it was just too hard. But then once I received my cancellation and that whole situation was resolved, I was fine. I went back to being kind of like, you know, stasis. I was fine. So my reasons, I guess, for not resigning are they're not harassing me. My ward leaves me alone, which is great. My bishop's actually pretty cool. I've met with him a couple of times and he waves at me in Safeway when I'm buying liquor with a tank top on. So like, he's like giddy, like, I know you, let's be friends. Like he's adorable. So no problems there. A lot of people, like the pushback that I have received, because as you both know, I'm sure we receive pushback from the ex-Mormon community because we're still technically members. And the pushback that I receive is, well, why don't you take your name off the church? They're still counting you as a member. And my response to that is, I don't believe anything they say about anything because they're liars. That they lie about everything, up and down, up and down, up and down. And me taking my name off of the records of their church, they're going to count me whether I want them to or not. Me resigning is not going to have, it's not going to matter. Because all of their numbers are lies. So I don't really buy into that reasoning. So that doesn't hold water for me. And then the other reason is that as a woman in the LDS church, I have received very little recognition for myself. And so there's a part of me that would be absolutely thrilled if they decided that disciplinary action was required because of, you know, things that I was saying on social media and in my podcasting world. Like if they were to say that I'm worthy of discipline, like, oh yes, you heard me? Like, oh my God. So that would be really, really exciting and, you know, very affirming for me if I were to be deemed worthy of discipline. And because I like being a member, because if I were to go back to church or to run into members in the wild, I like being able to be myself and also tell them, hey, guess what? I'm still a member. Because like it's unnerving for them because I am being myself and very authentic and whatever that may be. And because I'm also like not a terrible person. I'm a decent mm-hmm. person. I'm a nice person. And I try to, you know, be as not bitter as I can and, you know, and educate. And I like having like, I guess like you two, you know, you have that in with them if you're also a member. And I do like that. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the extent of my piece with a little bit of bitch fest in there. So, so yeah, that's me. So what do you guys think so far?
I mean, I think it's great. Some things that you brought up definitely struck a chord with me. So I think that in the ex-Mormon community and even the progressive Mormon community, we all are familiar, right, with like the stages of faith and Fowler's stages of faith. We like hierarchize ourselves. Like here we are, stage one, and everyone in the church is still in stage two or three or whatever. And like ex-Mormons are in stage four. And it's like, I don't feel like that is ever healthy. Okay. Like that is not a healthy model. I get what Fowler is saying and I respect his work, but I view it much more not linear, but like circular, right? So if you view it more like as a spiral where there's different intersection points that you hit all of the stages along your spiral path and you come out of the spiral path and like all along your path, you're just hitting all of these different, you know, stages of faith, stages of grief, whatever feelings, that is much more indicative of my journey. And if I ever say that my journey with faith is over, like just that will never happen because I don't believe that for me it's ever the case that it's finished, right? Like it's a continuum. It's completely ongoing and constant. But a lot of ex-Mormons don't really feel that way. They just want the church out of their life. And because I can totally understand why, it has harmed them in many ways and some that are very irreparable, and I completely identify and I understand that. But You know, for me, it's willingly submitting myself to the journey of it all and to feeling the feelings that I feel when I feel them. And admitting that and being okay with that and not making those go away because I just want them to go away because they're difficult or because they're, you know, sad or even traumatic. It's very much part of my healing to just exist in with the feelings, however I feel that, you know, they are. I wrote a piece a few weeks ago around Christmas about just the sense of loss that you feel when you lose your community. And like people have said, you know, well, you're still Mormon, you haven't lost anything. And I'm like, yeah, I have, because I'm not the right kind of Mormon anymore. And then even, you know, the ex-Mormons were like, why are you grieving for this horrible organization? And I'm like, because a loss is a loss. And that's a loss. And it, you know, I don't care if you think it's a horrible organization. Like for me, it had some very good things. And I can willingly admit to some of the great things that it brought to me and my life and to my family and, you know, to my loved ones. And so it's just not, I don't find the black and white thinking very helpful, which is coincidentally or not exactly what my problem is with the church. Mm-hmm. You know, and so to get that from the ex-Mormon community, I'm like, okay guys, it's just not that simple. And isn't that why we're all here? Because we don't want it to be that simple, because we don't want to be told what to do, because we want people to respect our authentic journey, however that may look, in the church. So why can't we respect that out of the church, right?
There are so many good reasons to resign from the church, right? Like when the church files an amicus brief of some, you know, some court case that is going through Utah legislature or Utah Supreme Court or the federal Supreme Court, and they can say, we are a church that represents 16 million people. I don't like being one of those 16 million. Because I don't like this organization representing me because it doesn't represent my ideas and my values. So I think that's an extremely valid reason. I think that there is a certain healing process that happens for a lot of people when they leave. So mm-hmm. when you are torn apart inside by still being a member of this church and you've been betrayed by this church that has been claiming to speak for God, and you realize that it's all built on a foundation of lies and you've been betrayed on the inside, it can be very cathartic for the person to resign. But it's also not necessary for everybody to go through that catharsis. It's not necessary for them to resign to have that same cathartic process. Mm-hmm. And I've gone through that catharsis. I've gone through understanding what I have come out of and what I no longer consider myself a member of. I understand the transition that I've made. I understand my faith transition. And part of that faith transition did not happen to include resigning my membership. But for a lot of people, for, you know, quitmormon.org processed over 22 or 23,000 claims or, you know, resignations at the time that we're recording this. For tens of thousands of people, that is a part of their healing process. And I think more power to you. If you need that as part of your process, then do it. Just do what is very best for you. But if you have a reason to keep your name on the rolls for whatever reason, if that's a personal reason, if that's a reason that you want to voice to other people, then, you know, you shouldn't feel pressure to resign because somebody thinks that you should resign. You should do what is best for you at mm-hmm. what timing is best for you.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I also think that it, with ex-Mormons, sometimes I feel like I can't even say the good parts of the church. Like the church freaking does community, like, wow. Okay. There is no other place that you can move anywhere in the world and have an instant community show up at your doorstep to help you move in. Okay. Right. There is no other organization like that. There is no other community that you can, you know, feel a sense of immediate connection to. Yes, it might not be totally authentic, but you can have pretty much immediate friends wherever you live, right? Mm-hmm. I don't feel like there's any sense of shame for admitting that there were things that I really did enjoy about the church. And I wasn't a nuanced Mormon for very long. I maybe lived in that space for like a year, mm-hmm. but I loved it. I mean, it was like, I would go to church and I would say something, you know, off the wall that was completely nuanced that I had gotten from Mormon Matters or something like that. And mm-hmm. people would be like, oh, I just love what you said. And I had people writing me privately and, you know, it was like finding the community within the community. And I loved that part. I would, like I said, I would still love, I like doing that, but I'm in a different space right now, obviously. But yeah, so I find that even within the ex-Mormon community, it's like, I can't even bring up good parts about it. Like, we have to view it all as bad. And I just, it's a very, very difficult, paradigm to hold. I don't view people that way. I don't view organizations that way. It's just, you know, a lot more multidimensional than that.
Well, it does. It creates a mindset of dogmatism, of black and white thinking. And Leslie, I mean, you've said black and white a couple of times in this conversation because that's what it encourages. Mm-hmm. And when you introduce nuance into a group of people who are thinking in black and white, that tends to break the system. Mm-hmm. And that's good, right? Like, the world doesn't exist in black and white. It's comprised of shades and colors and hues of beautiful, of beauty and wonder. And to allow a dogmatic stance, a black and white stance of a nuanced subject like being a member of the church and whether or not the church is a good organization, it's important to have nuanced conversations. And when people are, you know, no longer a member of the church, I think that that same dogmatic mindset still pervades the ex-Mormon community, that either you're an ex-Mormon or you're a Mormon. And that's just not how it is. And, you know, Leslie, you said it perfectly. Like, that's why Sunstone is awesome with More Than One Way to Mormon, because there is more than one way to Mormon. Mm-hmm. And encouraging breaking down of those black and white barriers in the dogmatism, I think, necessarily requires some people to say, no, I haven't resigned my membership, and I want to be able to say that I'm a member of the church in conversations in order to help break down that dogmatism.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And someone said this to me, and she, when I first came into the progressive space and the ex-Mormon space, she was like, hey, you know, I started seeing these issues very clearly. And so I reached out to her and she said, you know, we've all grown up in this environment. We've learned these coping mechanisms that aren't very healthy. We've learned how to coerce and manipulate and gaslight people because this is what we lived in. And, you know, we've learned that patriarchy helps us get ahead even as women. And we've learned all of these really unhealthy, you know, mechanisms for existing in the world. And just because people might leave Mormonism, they don't leave all of those mechanisms behind either. And I see this over and over again on discussion boards. Like, I posted an article about not wanting to leave the church, but like basically just feeling torn because like I experienced abuse by a bishop and just the grieving process that, you know, I sort of felt like I was going through. And I'm telling you, in one of the ex-Mormon groups, it was, I was getting it from both sides. Where if you don't like it, just leave, stop complaining and just leave, blah, blah, blah. But the ex-Mormons will use those unhealthy mechanisms, but they'll also be really mean about it. Like, they'll just swear at you to your face. I mean, at least the Mormons are like, hey, you probably don't belong here anymore. You know, but the ex-Mormons are like, get the F out of here. Like, I mean, it's really brutal. But I do want to say that one of the comments I received was from another woman, and it was basically like, you know, it's hard to feel sorry for you when you just have a victim complex and you are willingly submitting yourself to an organization. And I would tell the same thing to any abused woman, that you deserve abuse if you stay. And I was like, hold up. I mean, hold up. Yeah. The minute you say that, the minute anyone says that a woman or a person deserves the abuse that they get, you become the abuser.
Yeah, you are the bad guy in this conversation.
Yes. Okay, so yeah, and that is what I'm talking about, is that we want to claim enlightened state and awakened and all this other stuff that we see, you know, the issues with the church and we're out of there. But ex-Mormons, I cannot say how many times these unhealthy and very hurtful and harmful mechanisms have been used against other people when they don't, you know, view things exactly the same way. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of my, bitch fest, I guess, for the day, but.
Totally valid. Yeah. And that's something that I wanted to say is that I think it's very like, maybe some people might hear all the things that we're saying and think that we're hypocritical, but I just wanted to make the point that it feels very hypocritical to me to shame people, meaning like some few loud individuals in the ex-Mormon community will shame people for leaving or choosing to make the decision about their own life, not resigning, you know, for whatever works for us. Like, it's just so hypocritical. Like, why shame me for making the same decision about my life that you made about your life? It just happens to be a different decision. Why shame me? And like, everyone gets to do what works for them, for their own emotional healing. And some people need the cathartic exorcism of, you know, I'm out of the church, I'm not on the records. Some of us need the, like Leslie needs the in so that she can do the work that she feels like needs to be done to make the community a safer place, which I 100% value. Like, people that can help to create a safer community for those that are vulnerable in that community, who are not in that community by choice, like minors, children, people who are in that can't leave for whatever reason, like they deserve a safe community as well. And those who choose to stay and make it a safer community, I think are still doing a good deed. So we all get that choice to decide what is most beneficial for us at whatever given point that is in our lives. And like, isn't that the purpose of being an ex-Mormon, is taking control of your own choices and not being subjected to the judgment of others, you know, whether it's your community or the ecclesiastical authority or whatever. I just like to be in ex-Mormon spaces and get that kind of judgment. It's just so frustrating. But I did before we get too much, like I feel like we're bagging on the ex-Mormon community a lot. I do want to say that my initial experience with the ex-Mormon community was the best that it could have ever been, because I became introduced to the community during the time where I was being public about my BYU rape experience, and I was pretty much being absolutely shamed by the members of the church, obviously, because I was an anti-Mormon for sharing my experience, which is bullshit. And so I felt like I was being socially excommunicated from my community, my faith community, which sucked. And it was Lindsay Hanson Park that reached out to me and was like, hey, join Feminist Mormon Housewives, join this group and this group. Like, you need support right now. And I didn't know that these were like, you know, high percentage of ex-Mormon spaces. And so I joined the spaces, and because I was still a believing member, and I received so much immediate support from the ex-Mormon community, just love, support, unconditional, just, it was everything that I needed from my faith community that I was getting none of. And so I just wanted to put that out there, that the ex-Mormon community is an amazing place, but there are a few individuals in there that it is a lot because of how you feel when you're going through a faith crisis. There's a lot of bitterness and a lot of anger and a lot of like, you want everyone to be the same place that you are because you need that validation and you need that support. And so when you seek people in your supposed ex-Mormon community that don't mirror where you are, it's very triggering. And so I think it speaks more to the experience than the individuals.
And I think a lot of people, when they leave the church, and this is why I found the ex-Mormon community to be very inviting, because we all have a lot of anger and have no direction to aim it, right? Because when you leave the church, the enemy is this massive monolith that has endless pockets and endless political power that you don't know what to do about. You're so goddamn powerless. And I feel like there's nothing that I can do screaming from the rooftops. I feel like the only way where I can feel validation is to see everybody else on their rooftops screaming at the same thing that I'm mad at. So that's why I've found the ex-Mormon community to be very inviting and very supportive. And also, you know, I'm a cis dude, right? So it's really inviting to me. But I also do understand that once you get over that threshold, once you realize that there is a community there, it's good to seek out communities within the ex-Mormon community and the post-Mormon community of, you know, feminist Mormon housewives and the various other spaces that kind of integrate underneath the umbrella of post-Mormonism. And because there is a support community out there for you, even if it's only you and five other people, there is that community out there. But unfortunately, those communities don't have missionaries. They're not going to come knocking on your door. You have to actively go seek them out, which is a barrier of entry for a lot of people, and just not knowing where to start. Like you, Colleen, when you first were invited by Lindsay Park, you didn't know that there was community out there waiting for you to jump into it. You had to seek it out. And it took somebody extending their hand and saying, come with me. Come through the veil, and then you can be part of that support community. So there definitely are what you were saying, Leslie. Like when you move somewhere else, you can move anywhere in the country, and there's a Mormon community there to help you move your stuff in. Right? Unfortunately, that level of community, that level of infrastructure, doesn't exist outside of the church. And that's where it's incumbent on each and every one of us post-Mormons to say, hey, do you need help with something? Hey, we're going to go do, you know, community organization. Hey, we're going to go clean up a park. Hey, we're going to go hold a protest at the Safeco Field. Hey, let's all get together and do something and try and channel all of our collective efforts so that it's not just a bunch of individuals screaming on the rooftops who are mad at this one institution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think what you're saying is finding your community in the post-Mormon community is so important. And I want to say that there is community for people that aren't all the way out yet or still want the nuanced beliefs or, you know, want to explore, want to exist in the luminal space for a while or just aren't sure. Like and I do in some discussion groups, you know, I'll kind of know the environment of the group and the atmosphere and the flavor. And so I'm like, okay, I'm going to post this question or this, you know, discussion or this article in this group because I think it'll give me the best thoughtful feedback. Whereas this group, I don't think is going to understand what I'm saying with this particular post or whatever. And so I'm not going to post it there. And so I think that when you get to know all of the dimensions of the post-Mormon and progressive Mormon field, that you can find those places. And I do want to say that when I was very much very, very scared of talking about my story and saying it out loud and, you know, even admitting what had happened to me. And even now, like the more that I tell it, the more that I can kind of, the more that I understand, you know, and there's lots of different parts to my experience and my story. But it was the ex-Mormon and progressive Mormon space that gave me that outlet that said, we believe you. We believe you no matter what. We know that ecclesiastical abuse is a huge problem. We know the problems with the church. We are here for you and we got you. And that was so powerful. I mean, imagine the power that people feel when they go to church and feel welcomed and, you know, feel connected. That's the power that I really felt when I first started sharing my story in the progressive space. And, you know, they wanted to publish my stuff and they like gave me that chance that I never felt in the church. And it was very much stifled with my activity in the church, I would say. Mm-hmm. So, you know, those are things that I think are valid and important. And I want to say also, it was Lindsay Hanson Park that reached out to me after I shared this anonymous post somewhere. Yeah. And she was like, I mean, she called me that night and talk to me about what my bishop had said and what he had done in his office to me when I was alone with him. And it was so traumatic. I mean, even now, I'm like, I can't even thank her enough for having the insight to reach out. And I was still very much, I mean, I was like going to the bishop for a meeting. Like, that's how very much in I was. Mm-hmm. But here she was, and she was just willing to be in that space with me, which was so powerful. And sort of like, that's kind of what I felt like I was stepping into when I was like, I'm going to step into these communities, you know, and I'm going to see what they are. And it has, it's not without its problems, which I'm vocal about sometimes, but it is a great, you know, it is a great community. And, but we can do better. I think, like Bryce was saying, you know, we can be more of a community of people.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that there is a lot of robustness that is built into the post-Mormon community when there's so much diversity of these various post-Mormon groups, right? So when you're on the inside, and this speaks to why it's not a bad thing to still have your name on the records of being able to expand the community even more, of saying people who want to leave your records on the church rolls for whatever reason, there's a space for you too. You don't have to resign your membership to be a member of the post-Mormon umbrella, right? Yeah. But when you're in the church, there is this, it seems like a fragile system of community where it may have a robustness because of the number of people who agree and who comport with the system. But if you step anywhere outside of the margins of acceptable operation within the believing Mormon spectrum, you're stepping pretty far beyond the boundaries of what's considered okay to still be a member, which means that anybody trying to build communities within the church, those communities are going to crumble more often than they will succeed. However, when you're on the other side of that belief spectrum, when you are no longer believing in the church, but your name is still on the records, you're able to engage in the post-Mormon community, the ex-Mormon, whatever, the larger Mormon umbrella that's not just Brighamite Utah Mormonism. Mm-hmm. And that builds a diversity of support groups where you can find yourself dabbling into multiple different groups and feel like you're supported in whatever aspect of those groups that you need support in your life. And at different times in your life, you're going to need support for different things. And knowing that there's always a community there for you, wherever you are in your life, I think makes it a lot more robust than a fairly fragile system that's on the other side of the believing spectrum.
Right. Yeah. That actually reminds me of a quote that talks about social change, and it's by MLK. And I don't want to co-opt MLK's work in any way, Martin Luther King, but he did say the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice. And obviously he was talking about civil rights and things like that. But if we talk about, you know, any social change and even within the church, the religious progressive change that maybe we want to see or we wish was there when we were really active, it takes voices and it takes stands and people all along the arc. I mean, it takes people that, you know, are maybe not as extreme, and it also takes people that are more outspoken and anyone in between. I mean, it takes everybody to push for that change. And that's kind of how I view the ex-Mormon or post-Mormon community, that I hope that it can be more like that, where anyone along the spectrum, you know, who's kind of relegated to this outer darkness of Mormonism because they don't fit in whatever way it is, can find community and can be a voice for change and diversity and inclusion along the spectrum.
Mm-hmm. So one thing that I forgot to mention in my reasons why, and one of the major ones that I'm, is why should I have to resign? Like, that's one of my biggest pet peeves with the whole resignation process and ex-Mormons that will tell you that you need to take your name off and you need to, you know, exercise them from your life. And my response is, why should I have to? Like, if I were attending any other church in this entire country, in the entire world,
they don't require me to go through a lawyer to take my name off the records of the church. I just stop going and I'm no longer a member. Like, that's it. That's it's easy as that. And so, like, that's another thing that I don't want to give them that power again. I feel like by going through the steps of resigning and having to use an attorney to resign, like, again, I'm playing their game again. To me, I'm just like, no, I don't go. I'm not a member. That's the end of it. That's the end of the story. That's where it ends. Mm-hmm. And I can't control what they want to keep on their records. That's them. I can control me, and I don't go anymore, and I don't consider myself a member. And that's the end of it. So that's just another pet peeve of mine.
But there's also, isn't there kind of two sides to that coin, right? So when you say, I don't want to give them the power of, you know, going through their resignation process that they dictate in order for my name to be taken from their roles.
Yeah.
That's saying I am bending to their will, but also not resigning is in a way, a form of submission as well. So there's almost, that argument can almost go both ways, because it's like, I realize that there's this massive legalistic formula that's created to make it so it's hard for me to resign. So I'm just going to submit to them, and however, whatever they want to do, they can count me or they cannot count me. I don't care. Either way, it can be seen as it's a submission to their system, and it's yielding your own personal power to them. So there's really no winner in that argument, in my opinion.
Well, God damn it, Bryce.
Well, I'm just saying everybody's goddamn wrong except the church, because they always fucking win.
No.
That's the whole point.
Not in my life.
I also want to say, like, to the argument that someone is like, look, this is an evil organization. They're doing harm to people. Like, you need to leave so you're not a part of it. And it's like, I don't know if maybe you got this with the BYU Honor Code, Colleen, but I remember having this exact same argument with people who weren't even, like, didn't go to BYU, weren't members, but wanted the Honor Code to include an amnesty clause. Because why? Because we're human and we don't want other humans harmed. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's why, like, you know, I don't need to just walk away from something because it's being, because it's harming people. Like, that's not what I do as a human being who has empathy and compassion and who wants to help other people. And I would do that in any situation. You know, if I see someone being harmed, it doesn't mean that I just leave. Like, that is completely short-sighted for people to say that that is what I should do in regards to the church. Just mm-hmm. because they're harming people, I have to leave. It's like, no, why do I have to leave other than the church should change? Like, mm-hmm. why isn't that the question? It's kind of like asking an abused woman, why don't you just leave, other than asking, why does an abuser abuse? You know, or why does an abuser abuse? You know, it's like, let's flip the question around and stop the focus being on the people who are trying to make a change, or the people who are, you know, have been hurt by the church. Like, let's focus it on the harm that is coming from the church and the abuse that they enable, or the mechanisms that are, you know, being done that way. And it reminds me of, like, a lot of people who are working for, like, change, like Sam Young. And, you know, people aren't asking him, why didn't he just leave, or Bill Real, or all these people. It's like,
but they are.
Well, freak. Like,
they are. Yeah.
They are.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm sure they are, but yeah, maybe they are. Maybe they are. And I'm not seeing it in the different things, but, you know, it's when you're working for change, or when you're taking a stand that, you know, you find something unhealthy and you want to change that. I mean, it's fine if you just want people to walk away, but it's also okay if you want to stay and try and change that, you know?
And there may be something to be said about, like, creating an analogy, and this is not the best analogy, so forgive me for that, but I think it illustrates an idea that's important. When you see somebody getting mugged in a back alley, the most immoral thing to do is just turn your back and walk away. Mm-hmm. Now, it's not analogous, but because, well, there's a much more physical, direct action that's happening, but there's a power dynamic that's created in that scenario where if you just turn your back on the situation, you are acknowledging that somebody is being mugged, that somebody is withstanding abuse of some kind, and saying, that is not my problem, therefore, I am not going to deal with it. So now granted, everybody has to do what's best for them. And if you just, you know, if you resign from the church and you never even entertain the thought of anything Mormonism ever again, that is your prerogative. That is what you need to do for yourself. And okay. That is just fine. That is okay. But there are people who work within the activist sphere, like I think the three people on this call, where we see that there's a power dynamic happening. We see somebody being mugged and we can't just turn our back and walk away. We need to say, hey, what is going on here? This is unacceptable. We are trying to do what we can to stop that from happening. And it so happens that I think the three of us can come to some kind of agreement that we feel like we can possibly be more effective in stopping that mugging from happening if we keep our name on the membership records. And I mm-hmm. think that's one of my main reasons for staying in. And saying staying in, I think, is kind of a misnomer too, because I hope right. harbor no illusions that I'm not going to church every week. I don't believe in the church. I don't believe in God. I'm not in the way that a traditional member is in. The only way that I'm in is strictly by their membership records.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we should bring that up too, is like there's different platforms or stands, I guess, all along the spectrum of belief. Like people are like, well, are you a believer? And like, in what? In Joseph Smith, in Brigham Young, in the Seer Stone, in the Hat, in the Salamander Letter? Like what are you like? Let's
right.
Because I honestly, I haven't unpacked all that crap right now. And like, I'm working on that, but I don't know. And I don't know how to answer you. And it's not black and white for me. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that like, in any progressive Mormon's journey or any Mormon's journey, really, they can feel differently at different times. Sometimes I really think that Joseph Smith, it was like a sexual addict and he was, you know, a very unhealthy person who had these horrible, you know, used spiritual abuse to basically coerce young girls into marrying him. And well, most of the time I actually think that like all the time I think that. Okay. but if you ask me, does that mean automatically that the Book of Mormon doesn't have inspired scripture or contain goodness or contain truth or contain beauty? I would really struggle to say, no, I think it is all a bunch of crap. Like to me, I'm like, you know, I don't exist in the, well, if he's this, then it means this. Like, I just don't view it that way so much, you know? And I've listened to different people kind of nuance that, and maybe they think that he's a fallen prophet or he never was a prophet or whatever the case may be. And that is totally fine. Like, I don't really, like, that's not my issue with the church right now, you know? The history is a huge issue for people, and I totally want to validate that. But for me, it's just not my issue, probably because I haven't unpacked all of it yet. Mm-hmm. And I'm the person that I want to make a very informed choice and decision when I, you know, do settle on how I think about something and how I frame it. But yeah, so for me, it's kind of like, that is such a complicated question to even answer that if you're asking me that question, it kind of shows, it tells me where you are. You know, that, okay, this is, you're obviously thinking that there's like one right answer or you could be in or out when I don't view it that way at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. There's so many, I've met so many nuanced people that can look at the Book of Mormon. Like a lot of people in the Community of Christ have this take where they see the Book of Mormon or the story of Joseph Smith as mythical and as a work of fiction, but something that we can still get positive messages out of. Like, yeah, there can be terrible things in it, but every once in a while there could be a good story that we could actually learn something good for, positive from. And we can cafeteria pick the good stuff and the bad stuff, and we can still choose what good things we want to let into our lives and give attention to. And if that happens to be something out of the Book of Mormon, then, you know, if that's something that you're comfortable with and that, you know, that speaks to you, then absolutely that's something that you should validate, you know, that should be able to do. Another topic or issue, we were talking about how people tell other people to leave and abusive situations and, you know, all of this stuff. Something that I hear come up quite frequently in terms of leaving the ex-Mormon community. And I find this kind of hard to talk about because when I was a member, I was definitely not like queer presenting. And so I didn't have the lived experience of a lot of other LGBTQ community people who have been active members of the church while, you know, out of the closet or struggling. So this is also a community where a lot of people feel like they can tell them what they should be doing. And that's something that I see it a lot. I've heard it on other podcasts. People, you know, a lot of ex-Mormons feel very strongly that all LGBTQ people need to leave the church immediately for their own safety. And I mean, that can be a valid opinion for them, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it transfers to everyone. It can't. It's just not how humans work. We're very complex and we're very unique and everyone has their own situation. And so like, that's another community where I feel like people are trying to tell them what to do. And we just can't do that. We just can't.
Yeah, I do. I feel like that is a very valid concern. And obviously I can't speak to it. I'm not part of that community, but I try to be an ally. And, you know, if there are such amazing people that do such amazing work within the community and within breaking down the barriers and increasing the understanding for those in the community to be able to change their mind. And I mean, I was one of those people. Like when I was very much in the church, I was against gay marriage and I didn't, you know, like I just sort of lived with the opinions that were prescribed to me by my community. And it was because I had nobody educating me on any of the other issues or, you know, personalizing the issue for me. But once I did, my opinion completely changed. And I think a lot of post-Mormons and progressive Mormons are that way. Like we very much live by a prescribed set of opinions, and even politically, I would say, and, you know, socially and everything. And, but when that, It doesn't take very much for one person just to come in to that life or your life and change your mind on a whole set of issues. And so I think that that's important. And so those voices are needed if it's safe for them. And I don't want to ever say that, you know, they should stay if it's not safe, ever, never. But yeah, I think you're completely, you know, right and valid in validating their choice to stay.
Yeah.
Just, can we just all stop shitting on each other?
I mean, that would be wonderful.
See, like, use for me. Say, for me, this is what I thought was best. Like, don't say, you should do this. Say, this is what I chose to do, or this is what other people chose to do, and you make your own decision, right? Like, stop controlling other people. We grew up in a system that is based solely on controlling every single thing we do, think, or say.
Exactly.
And when you leave that system, like, good. It's a way healthier way to live, unless you're somebody who operates in a healthy space when you know, you're told what to do every moment of your life and you're happy living that, like, good, more power to you. But there's a certain liberation that comes when you stop thinking in shoulds and start thinking in what is best, right? And I think that there's a lot of utility to thinking what is best for you, what is best for me, what is best for everybody to do at this time. And instead of saying, I know what's best, therefore you should do something.
Right.
Yeah. I want to say that my membership also relinquishing that would very much alienate me from my family. And my family is still very much in the church, and I love them and respect them, and they are very good people. They're great people. And like, my dad is one of the best Mormons that I know, because he can talk, you know, to me about these issues. And like, if, I mean, I can really tell him, Dad, you can't say that someone should do this because you don't have their lived experience. And he's like, well, yeah, you're right. Like, I shouldn't do that. I mean, he's very, like a very great Mormon, but he's also very in and very believing. And I just don't, I don't feel the need or the desire to have my family ties severed for like withdrawing my name for any, you know, whatever reason that I would find. Like, that's not worth it to me. And that also brings up a point that I've heard a lot. And I think even John DeLynn said this in one of his lectures somewhere, or like whatever he does. he said, you know, why do we care? Why we as post-Mormons, why do we care so much? And he's like, because we have family in the church that are still in the church that we love. There's good people that are in the church that we love. We want to strengthen those relationships. Should they be harmed, or should they experience a faith crisis, or should they experience abuse, or should they go through any of these things that many of us have gone through? We want to be there for them. Like, we want there to be a community for them. You know, it goes back to what you were saying, Bryce, about having the community for when you need to leave or have to leave, or, you know, are kind of pushed out for whatever reason.
And I want to jump on something that Colleen said when she was introducing her perspective on the subject. And like, if the church ever chooses to excommunicate you, Colleen, you're like, oh, holy shit, you're listening. Great. I think one awesome and easy way to gauge what the church deems important is by judging who they excommunicate at what time, right? So very recently, Gina Colvin just had her excommunication trial, which they deemed that she was not to be excommunicated, but that was for the sole purpose of she joined the Anglican Church and was baptized into it while she was an active member. So the church chose to hold a disciplinary council for her, which shows that they are putting a certain value on having exclusive rights to somebody's religious claims, right? Mm-hmm. And that's apparently valuable to the church. Looking at Bill Reel's excommunication, right? His was because he is speaking out in a public forum and saying that a leader lied. He said, here are five examples of when an apostle lied to the people. And the church excommunicated him for telling the truth about those lies. The church places a value on people being silent about the leadership when the leadership lies. So it's an easy way to gauge where the church's current value system is by just understanding the circumstances under which people are excommunicated. And I'm not somebody who's going to go to church and pass out business cards for my podcast, right? I am not using my membership to bring people out of the church. The only way that I'm using my membership is my membership number on Ancestry, right? Because that's useful to me because I do genealogy work and I need to have names and dates and birth and death dates. But that's the only reason that I'm using my membership, and it's just a number so I can gain access to see people's patriarchal blessings. I am not using it for anything. So if the church ever chooses to excommunicate me, it is purely out of spite. They are doing it because they are trying to cleanse their membership rolls of anybody who is speaking ill of the church. And that, I think, will be a large signal of what the church is valuing at the time if they should decide to excommunicate me. Because if they excommunicate me, they're going to have to go on a massive cleansing of excommunicating you, Colleen, and you, mm-hmm. Leslie, and mm-hmm. dozens of other podcasters out there whose membership names are still on the records, who have not gone through the process of getting their name off, mm-hmm. and who are speaking out just as critically of the church as we are.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I'm actually just, this is like a side note, but I'm actually interested. Do you think that in Gina's case, I know like with Bill and Sam and even John, like it came from the headquarters of the church, and like that's kind of pretty much been proven that the disciplinary action was like initiated by the top. Do you think in Gina's case it was? You don't know.
Hard to say.
It was just an interesting question. Like, because I am of the opinion that it was. I don't know what actually she thinks specifically, but I was having this discussion and I was like, yeah, I think it was because, the outcome of it was that she wasn't going to be excommunicated. And so I'm like, why would they have called this excommunication or called this disciplinary hearing only to, you know, go back on it? It just seems kind of weird. But in actually one of the post-Mormon groups, I had said that, and I was like, yeah, and the guy was like, no, she says that it's like, it was from her local leadership. And I was like, yeah, but I kind of have a different opinion. I don't know if it really did. I think that there was like pressure there. And just because I said that, like the guy blocked me and I was like, we can't have a conversation about like different opinions or like, it was just so weird. So yeah, anyway, that gives you a little bit of the flavor, I guess, like of the random. Okay. Well, I mean, it reminded me honestly of like the Time and Relief Society that I stood up and I was like, I didn't stand up, but I raised my hand and I said, yeah, I think that women are going to get the priesthood because we had it before in Joseph Smith's time. And it was like shut down. Like you are going to be, you know, locked out of here. Yes. I mean, that was like very much how it was. So. Yes. Apparently we still don't listen to other people's opinions
or truth.
Heresy. Anyway. We can't have that.
Well, I think
in the ointment.
I've taken enough of both of your time today. Thank you so much for getting together with me so we can, we're now the three ex-Mormons, right? Can we adopt that label instead of the three Mormons?
Three
ex-Mormons. Come on.
The three ex-Mormon tears. Mormon tears. Never. No. Cut that, Colleen, please. I tried to Bryce make something of it. It just did not work.
Bryce put something in his coffee.
Hey, it's 10 o'clock in the morning. Why not?
So did you guys have any closing thoughts before we wrap up, Leslie?
No, I mean, I feel like I, you know, pretty much said everything. I just would implore everyone to respect the space that everyone's in. And, you know, if you don't like maybe something that someone is saying, feel free to push back in a nice way and in a thoughtful way. And, you know, not where you like swear at the person and victim blame them, because that's never helpful for anyone. And it doesn't prove your point that you are enlightened in any way. So I would just, you know, respect everyone for the space that they're in and realize that it takes all voices.
Yes. That just proves that you're a dick when you act like a dick, pretty much.
Well, if it walks like a duck and talks like a duck, you know.
Or dick, whatever. So with the dick joke, with Bryce here, I have to my role is dick jokes, right, Bryce?
I guess so. Yeah. What happened? Dick joke brigade fell apart.
I know. We gotta get back on My Book of Mormon and find some other reason.
Yeah. Now we're talking. There we go.
Bryce, what are your closing thoughts?
Do whatever makes you happy. Do what's best for you, and you know, stop shitting on people.
Amen.
Pretty easy. You don't know what's best for anybody else. You can just say, this is what I found is best for me. That's a lot easier way to live your life. And, you know, when you tell somebody that they should do something, that somehow makes you responsible for their actions. No, fuck you. You're not responsible for other people's actions. Do what you want to do. Do what makes you happy and allow and give people that same respect. That's not fucking hard.
No. I tell my kids all the time, you're in control of you and no one else. And I mean, why waste the energy trying to control other people?
Right.
Why give away that?
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much to both of you. I think we have exhausted the bitch fest and the rational conversation, all of it together. So go us.
For now. Awesome. For now, anyway.
Until next time.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks, Kelly. Bye-bye.
And that wraps up today's topics. We are so glad you stopped by. Be sure to join the Mormon Happy Hour on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Patreon. If you smiled, please drop us a 5-star review wherever you found us. See you next week. Cheers.